This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Well, today we're going to be talking to Close Encounter witness Terry Lovelace, one of the most well-known of the Close Encounter witnesses whose experiences have been extensively studied. Today we're talking to Terry Lovelace, one of the most documented Close Encounter witnesses in the world. He's had extensive medical examinations. He has an implant that is known to be anomalous, and there are x-rays of it in his books. There's no question about its reality and its high-level strangeness. He is also, his case was multiple witnessed. It happened with him and another guy, and like my case, it went on afterwards and goes on to this day. You won't ever have heard another show quite like this, because it's not often that two Close Encounter witnesses who are this involved with the visitors actually talk together. I mean, amazed I haven't talked to Terry before, but I haven't. In any case, it's a great show. But before we start, something unusual happened in this show. Well, a lot of unusual things happened, as they always do when I'm talking to someone who really is a Close Encounter witness. There's nothing new. Among other things, the show completely disappeared from the website overnight. We're in the process of restoring it right now. There was a strange sound in the show. Fortunately, we made a record of the sound, and I still have it. I'm going to play it right now, and then I'm going to read the comments of a sound expert we sent it to. Now, you may not hear it, because it's not going to be audible on all equipment, and you also may not hear it in the show for the same reason, but it is still there. This is the sound, and this is the moment in the show that it appeared. This is as it was recorded in the show.
But over the years, my attitude softened somewhat, and I had the feeling that, yeah, they hurt us, but it was collateral damage. I don't think it was intentional. It wasn't a torture session, you know?
Hopefully you could hear that. It won't be audible on all systems, so if you don't hear it in the middle of what he's saying, then it's your system, because it is definitely audible on our systems over here. Now, let me read to you what happened when we sent this to a sound expert. This is really extremely unusual. He writes, "No, I haven't heard anything quite like this before. I measured the two instances, and here's what I found. One was at 5955.235 hertz and 11910.47 hertz. The upper one is presumably the first overtone, which is twice the fundamental frequency. Second was at 5939.085 hertz and 11878.17 hertz. He then includes a screenshot of the audio spectrum. He says, and continues, "Telephone sound maxes out at about 4 kilohertz, so these sounds weren't carried in the audio of the phone call." He goes on, "In my opinion, it's unlikely for several reasons that they were created by acoustic feedback, say from your headphones to your mic, but you could experiment with that," and he explains how to do this. We did the experiments, and it was not reproducible in our equipment in any way at all. He then continues, "The sound isn't an electrical glitch, i.e. generated by a dirty connection somewhere." Now listen to this, folks. Listen to this. He says, "Now here's an anomaly. When I did my first measurements, I held my phone up to my loudspeakers using a frequency measuring app. I then wrote down the result. Then I did it again, but no sound came out of my speakers. Why? Because my amplifier was turned off. So there was no way I could have heard or measured the sound the first time. Yet I heard it, and it registered on the app." And then he says, "I'm not making this up. And he isn't. He's a very high-level professional sound expert, and he does not play games like that. So what do we have here? Well, you may be able to hear it in the show, but probably not, because when we processed the show, the sound disappeared. However, I did keep that recording, and you, if you are able to hear it on your equipment, you will have been able to hear it a few moments ago. Now, let's get on with the show. I'd also like to remind you that my new book, Jesus, A New Vision, is out. It's available as a Kindle. It's going to be available as an audio book in mid-February, and it should be available as a hardcover and maybe a paperback in a week or so. This is January 29, and there are some weird reviews on Amazon because it's not a Christian book. It's also not a secular book. It's a book about us and the fact that Jesus was trying to show us a new level of empowerment that we've totally ignored all these thousands of years. So please take a look at it. And there's, in fact, there's someone on the website called Secret Harmonies who dropped a note in the comments section in this Dreamland saying what a good book it is. And it is a good book. It finally, it's the first time ever that anyone has seen what Jesus was really trying to do. It's about us. It's about our empowerment. And boy, we need this right now. We need it very, very badly. Okay, folks, so here comes Terry Lovelace. Watch out below. It's my privilege this week to welcome Terry Lovelace to Dreamland. Terry is well known in the Close Encounter community, he and out of it for two, for that matter. You may have heard him on Coast. He has been on many shows, but he's never been on this show, and he's never, to my knowledge, had a conversation with another Close Encounter witness who's also had similar intimate experiences with the visitors. Terry's two books that we're going to be talking about are Incident of Devil's Den and Devil's Den, The Reckoning. Terry's website is terrylovelace.com. I urge you to visit it and get his books and get involved with Terry because he's the real deal, as you are going to find out in what is turning out to be, now that I'm going back and I am listening and I am re-recording the opening. This is phenomenal. It's one of the best darn interviews I've ever done. It's an open discussion between two people who are obviously telling the truth about one of the most incredible of all human experiences. So please listen to this wonderful, wonderful man telling us his story. We're going to start by talking about an experience we shared at the Consciousness and Contact Conference at the Pine Ridge Lakota Sioux Reservation in South Dakota, run by Mia Farolato, one of our podcasters on unknowncountry.com. She has the New Observations podcast and New Observations magazine, both well worth your time, by the way. In any case, we were there together. What happened was I saw into a parallel universe for the entire time I was there, and Terry was an absolutely a direct witness to this. And I don't believe I've ever had another person on the show. I may have had one who actually was present while this was happening to me and listened to me describing this experience. And Terry, can you describe what I was saying and what it was like from your perspective?
I can, and I want to stress that I was there and that, you know, your credibility is above reproach. I mean, you were staring out the window, and I won't say trance-like, but I'll say fixated on the landscape as we drove past. And this is the Badlands of South Dakota, so there's not much out there but rock and sand, an occasional scrub brush of some kind, and Whitney witnessed something different than what Alan and I. Alan was driving. I was seated right behind Whitley. Whitley was looking at something totally different than what we were seeing. And I think he was seeing another dimension and describing the fantastic things he was seeing. And at one point, I recall that you saw animals like buffalo or something, and perhaps people in rags walking.
At this point, I no longer recall, have a direct recollection of seeing the people, but if I was describing them at the time, I must have seen them. And I don't think I recall seeing the animals either. Although, as I say, these things are very hard to remember clearly, especially over time. In any case, I want to get to your experiences at the family gathering. We were invited to a gathering where we were told not to bring cell phones or record anything.
Let me describe the setup just briefly. There were a lot of cars there in an open field and an area, arena-like area, and there were a group of men drumming and lots of people around. I felt like we were the only outsiders there.
And yeah, that would be true.
We had been sternly warned, politely, but sternly warned, not to bring cameras, phones, photographic equipment. Being guests, we honored that request and didn't. I sure wish I'd had my phone with me, but...
Me too. Okay. Me too.
I got it. It's burned into my brain. The first thing I noticed was that to the drum beat, I was just kind of nodding my head. And then I had the compulsion to take my pulse, and my pulse was right in line with the drum beat. And I thought that was kind of significant.
Fascinating. Yeah, I did not think to do that.
I heard someone yell.
The UFO. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us about the UFO.
The point of the exercise. Someone said, "Look up." I looked straight up. And it took a moment, and I saw a circular white UFO absolutely at a dead stop while some light clouds drifted by. The sky was mostly blue.
Yeah.
And we had a good view of it. And, I spent 6 years in the Air Force. I'm a little familiar with aircraft and aircraft coming in. And, I mean, I don't know the size of the thing. But I can tell you from the cloud cover that drifted by, that wasn't a drone. That was something much bigger and much further up in the sky.
Quite a few people saw it. And incidentally, folks, just in passing, Terry makes reference to someone named Alan who was driving the car during the time that he was sharing the other universe experience with me. That was a man called Alan Steinfeld. And if you're a subscriber, you can listen to a podcast, a show I did with Alan, I believe about a year ago, where he describes his experiences as well. But let's move on. We both had extraordinary experiences at that conference, and I think it's now kind of a legend, the conference. Let's move on and go to your experiences in life and your what has to be one of the most remarkable lives in Close Encounter that anyone has ever been able to describe. We've never dialogued about it before. And, we're both kind of unique in this space because we both have had these experiences and written a lot and thought a lot about them. So why don't we start way back at the Devil's Den incident?
Yes. And I'll skip over some childhood events that I had and go right to really the big event, which was 1977. And this was such a big event, I tend to measure my life in pre-1977 and post-1977. I was 22 years old. My friend was 23 when we drove 6.5 hours down from the airbase to camp there. And we went there as children and came back adults. It changed us.
Yeah.
We were camping. We didn't stay in the campground. We dodged the park rangers and went around a chained off area, which I found later is an area of federal land that's separate from Devil's Den State Park. It's run by the Bureau of Land Management. And there's a high plateau there. And we set up camp on this high plateau. And my friend, you know, we did all the fun stuff. And by the way, it was the first time one of us had ever been camping in our lives. You know, we're both city kids.
Well, I'm sure you've been camping at Devil's Den many times since. not such a good idea, eh?
I'm not an outdoorsman anymore. No. If I ever was. And my friend, we're kind of you know, kicked back on our air mattresses with the campfire between us, having a nice conversation. And we had like a lull in our dialogue, and I noticed that, and this sounds cliche, I know. People are going to roll their eyes, but please, I swear this is true, that the crickets, the tree frogs, all the insects in the forest that make noise had stopped. And it was dead silent. And not only was it dead silent, it was still. I mean, we lost the breeze that we had earlier. And that made me nervous. And I asked my friend, you know, like he's going to know, but I asked him anyway, you know, is this normal? And he's like, yeah, you know, we've been laughing and cutting up. Don't worry about the bugs. They'll come back. And then he was fixated looking at something to his left on the western horizon. And he asked me, Terry, were those lights there before?
Oh, dear.
I'm like, what lights? Yeah. I mean, we were in a remote location. There were no lights. But I stood up and I saw three stars, each one about, they all were the same luminosity. Each one about as bright as the North Star, packed into a tight little triangle. And they were too far above the horizon to have been like a train or a parking lot or something. And we're wondering what they are. And my friend says, oh, it's probably a plane headed in our direction. Wait till it changes 2 degrees and we'll be able to see its movement.
Of course, you guys were into aviation, so you would know.
Yeah, I mean, we were around aircraft and airplanes and stuff, and
right.
Yeah, we had an idea. So we watched, and after a few minutes, what it did was it rotated first. It rotated like on an axis and aligned the base of the pyramid parallel with the horizon. And as soon as it did that, it started to move up in the air. And that's the first time I felt this feeling of calm wash over me. And it was a mixture of calm and I'll say mild disinterest. You know, I wouldn't go as far as to say apathy, but I don't know how to describe it. I felt more like an observer than a participant in the events, if that makes any sense.
Sort of. And I mean, it sounds like you were stressed and dissociated, you know?
I think we were influenced. I think we're under the influence of something.
I think that as soon as you've experienced that silence, that's when the influence started. I know that when Ann and I and our little boy, the night of my close encounter in December 26, 1985, we went walking, and it was just like that. It was a winter night, true, but there was not a leaf, not a breath of breeze. It was totally silent, and the snow started to drop, and my son said, Daddy, look at the snowflake. And he had on the back of his glove a snowflake that it was big, but it looked like they look in a microscope. It was a perfect, beautiful, and the snowflakes were all like that. They were falling so beautiful, and it was just that kind of thing. And then later when the visitors started to show up a lot, we would always know they were there because in the hours before they finally emerged, that silence would fall. So go ahead with your story. Oh, no, wait a minute. We've just come up on the first break. You know, we live right now in a time of great upheaval and personal loneliness and also dread. The dread comes from the fact that we've been taught that we are only material bodies, and therefore we're terrified of death as never before. But it's not true. And in my book, Jesus, A New Vision, I look at this in a completely new way, not through the lens of Christianity and not through the lens of secularism either, by exploring the life of Jesus and his teachings in this new way, Jesus, A New Vision, sheds fresh light on the meaning and power of his life, his parables. It explores the mysteries of the Gospels of Thomas and Mary with fresh insight, and it explains why he did what he did. Then it goes into what the Shroud of Turin really is. It is not a medieval forgery. Something extraordinary happened in that tomb. To find out, read Jesus, A New Vision. It is truly a first. It's available on Amazon right now, and it will be available as an audio book by February the 15th.
Support unknowncountry.com and its great mission to make contact happen. Use our vast archive of interviews, meditations, commentaries, news, and Whitley Strieber audiobooks to expand your mind and your understanding of close encounter. Meet others who have similar interests on our active free message board or in our subscriber comments and Wednesday night chats. There is no other site like Unknown Country in or out of this world. Go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe today.
This is Whitley Strieber. Listen to me now from June of 2010 talking to Alan Lammers about an incredible thing that happened to him on the island of Sulawesi in Indonesia.
Here you are in South Sulawesi in the little town in the district of Sandu Batu. What happened? You were told something rather strange.
Well, we were told before we went, like my friends that I worked with the NGO, they told me that when you pack, because it kind of happened by accident, I went out to buy a raincoat. It rains quite a bit in this part of the world. And so I went out and I bought a yellow raincoat. And my friend said, I'm sorry, you can't take that to Walla Walla. And I said, well, why not? And he says, well, you can't wear that color. So anyways, excuse me. So I thought, okay, well, what colors can I wear? They said, well, you can only wear black or white. You cannot wear any bright colors, no bright green, especially no yellow. And, you know, that's all you should bring. And I said, well, what would happen? And they said, well, people disappear.
You will find the rest of that story, and it is brain-bending, in the June 5th edition of Dreamland, June 5, 2010 edition of Dreamland in the unknowncountry.com archive. This archive is one of the richest of its kind in the world, probably is the richest of its kind in the world, filled with extraordinary shows, of which this show is certainly one, this show with Alan Lammers. You will never have heard anything like it. It does what Dreamland is here to do. It opens your mind to the fact that we live inside a hidden reality that we prefer not to acknowledge, but not here. Here on unknowncountry.com, we do acknowledge it. We live in it and we love it. Subscribe today. You can't go wrong. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and get started. We're back. We're talking to Terry Lovelace, Incident at Devil's Den, Devil's Den, The Reckoning, plus terrylovelace.com, a great website, and you can find him on Facebook. The two of you are out there. Silence has fallen. You've seen the three lights.
To me, three lights in the sky like that mean the Greys.
And when you see that, you're on your way. So you didn't know that at the time, though.
We had no idea. We watched this thing as it climbed into the sky and it reached, you know, a ceiling somewhere. I have no reference to know how high it was, but it was up there. Then it began a slow glide down, but it was definitely coming in our direction.
Oh, yes.
And again, you know, our emotions were muted. I mean, we should have been a little bit freaked out. We should have been concerned. We should have been something other than mildly disinterested and sedated, but that's the condition we were in. And as it came down, you know, we could see, it was a beautiful night with a trillion stars out, so we could see the area inside the three stars. As it would pass over a field of stars, they would blank out for a moment and then kick back in as it passed. And we saw it tumble, which was kind of unique. And I had never seen anything like it, tumbling through the air. I had a strange thought. I had this strange thought that it was moving with purpose, that it wasn't just out of control. It was moving with an agenda. But I still was not afraid.
You see this thing moving and tumbling around, and you think, oh, it has an agenda, and you just kind of let that pass. You just keep watching it, waiting. Someone had control, I think, of your minds already. So you're watching this thing come in, and you're not concerned. You've been emotionally deadened somehow. I mean, I'd be running like hell, and so would you, if something hadn't been done to you, right?
Absolutely. We saw it glide in. After it finished its descent, it leveled out at about 5,000 feet, headed in our direction, and then dropped probably another 2,000 feet. As it did its descent, it dimmed its lights on the corners of the triangle. They were still there, but they weren't as bright as they were when it was up in the sky. And if you go to my website, terrylovelace.com, I drew a picture of that. And that picture was drawn contemporaneous with the event, be it on notebook paper, and then, I redrew it with a better pen and on some better paper. But that's a pretty good representation of what we saw. And if you look at the lower left corner, you can see three tiny images of a tent, my buddy and I, and my old 66 Chevy. So this thing was enormous. And it stopped. We were kind of offset. We were on an area of ground I call a meadow because it wasn't forested. It was just full of, grass about halfway up your lower leg. And it's a beautiful place, but we had camped off to the side near the tree line. And I'm glad we did, because this thing filled the entire meadow, which, by the way, is triangular shaped. I've got some images from Google Earth that show it. And it filled that entire meadow. And my friend stood up and said, well, show's over. And he walked to the tent, show's over. And I felt a wave, another wave. You know, that sedated feeling came in waves. And then it switched from, all I wanted to do was go to sleep. You know, we were two young guys. I mean, we were used to working the night shift. So, I mean, it was mid-afternoon for us. But all I wanted to do was go to sleep. And my friend went to the tent. I walked over through my air mattress then, and I fell on top of it. I didn't bother to take my boots off, which would be significant later. But I fell on top of that air mattress. My last thought was... Toby'd been wrong, because the crickets to the tree frogs never did come back. And after that, I was just out. I'd estimate I was out. Both of our watches stopped at 240. Mine stopped at 240. His was stopped at 241. We were working in the Air Force as medics at EMT, so a watch was integral to the job. And I had a good watch. Both of our watches stopped at 2:41, so we had no idea when we woke up what time it was. But I woke up to these flashing yellow, orange, greenish, white lights that were incredibly bright. And every time they flash, I mean, they'd light up the inside of that tent like a ballpark at night. It was just very, very bright, like an old school flash bulb. And I noticed that my boots had been undone. Unlaced almost all the way down, and that confused me. And I'm kind of confused anyway. I'm not sure. Oh yeah, I must be camping. That's right. I went camping with Toby. So I put my boots on properly, my socks were on sideways, too. And I never do that. You know, they teach you how to take care of your feet in the military. And I wouldn't do that today. And I look to my left, and my buddy is on his knees peering out at something in the meadow. And I'm like, what is it, Toby? Is it park rangers? What's out there? And I got to my knees. I pulled back the flap on my side of the tent just an inch, because all of that apathy, disinterest, sedation, that's all out the window now. I'm absolutely terrified. And when I look out the window, I saw two things, that the thing that had been 3,000 feet over the meadow had descended and is now just 30 feet above the meadow. So we can see it from the side. And it's enormous. It's thick. We didn't see it that the depth of the thing. It was like a medical building. It was so big. And that was terrifying. And then in one of the flashes of light, because the points of the triangle are still flashing, the area under the triangle and that 30-foot area is just pitch dark. But when the lights would flash, I could see what I took to be a dozen, maybe 15 children walking around.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, oh, boy. And I said to my friend, I said, Toby, man, what are these kids doing out here in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the night? And he said, Terry, man, those ain't no little kids. Look at them. They're not human. Don't you remember? They took us, and they hurt us.
But, okay, so you guys are, now it's post the experience, and you're still sort of not fully cognizant of what's going on, are you?
No, we're kind of half out of it. Now fear has taken over. Now we're just genuinely afraid. And we just watched as these guys disappeared into this light. And then the light switched off, the droning noise stopped, and the thing took off. And it didn't take off like a rocket ship. It just kind of took off like a hot air balloon. It just lifted up, rotated a little bit, and went straight up. The higher it went, the smaller it got. And then the lights, as it got, you know, pretty high up in the air, it kicked those lights back on to high. And if you look at my drawing on my website, there's what I call a light bar that ran the entire height of the craft. And there was a beam of light, a bar of light, that would run up and down that light bar. And what that did was, when it was in the sky, it gave the illusion of a twinkling star.
So
it wasn't just three static lights. So it was, in some way, camouflage or something.
Yeah, obviously. They came, they saw, they did, and they left. And then it's interesting, isn't it, that they felt a need to camouflage themselves at a time when you'd think they would be completely invulnerable. But are they? And this leads into a huge area of what is going on here? And we're going to take a brief break for Free Dreamlanders. And then when we get back, we're going to talk about, just get a little deeper into this, because Terry's told this story many times, but never with someone like me, because, you know, we're definitely kindred spirits here. We both do this. Okay, we'll be right back.
Support unknowncountry.com and its great mission to make contact happen. Use our vast archive of interviews, meditations, commentaries, news, and Whitley Strieber audiobooks to expand your mind and your understanding of close encounter. Meet others who have similar interests on our active free message board or in our subscriber comments and Wednesday night chats. There is no other site like Unknown Country in or out of this world. Go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe today.
You know, there's an incredible archive on unknowncountry.com of Dreamland and all of our podcasts, my meditations, audiobooks, and so much more. Here's an example of just one of the extraordinary interviews that's there for you to listen to right now, just as timely as it was when it took place. Linda Moulton Howe interviews Gary McKinnon. Remember Gary McKinnon? the guy who hacked into NASA's private websites and found all kinds of strange things about space forces, and they tried for years to extradite him and bring him back to the United States to put him in prison, and finally gave up on it, and he's now a free man in England. This interview with Linda Moulton Howe stands, though, as a historic document. It is quite amazing. Let's start by listening to my introduction from that period, and then we'll hear a little bit of Linda Moulton Howe and Gary McKinnon.
Mr. McKinnon is a British citizen and has been fighting extradition, preferring to be tried in courts in his own country.
There follows a truly extraordinary interview between Linda Moulton Howe and Gary McKinnon, one of the few. Gary McKinnon was the young Britisher who hacked into NASA's computer system and found all kinds of very unusual material about space forces and all sorts of things. Well, now, in 2020, the Space Force is going public, so was it really there all along? One of the few places you can hear an interview like this is on unknowncountry.com. This is one of the most extraordinary places in the world, and you really should get into it. Subscribe to unknowncountry.com today. You can listen to Gary McKinnon speaking very frankly about what he found, and there is so much more on this website. It is literally a treasure trove. Go to unknowncountry.com right now, click on the subscribe tab, and get started. There is real wonder waiting for you.
Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com.
We're talking to Terry Lovelace, his website, terrylovelace.com, his books, Incident at Devil's Den, Devil's Den, The Reckoning. Two books. Devil's Den, The Reckoning is just from 2020, and the other one is from 2018. But if you haven't read them, you can start really with either one, but I would certainly start with Incident at Devil's Den, because it's this is the setting of the scene. Now, so let's go back to your situation though, and kind of get to the point. At some point, you decide to leave. So tell us the story from where we left off.
Yeah, when we saw that this thing had gone. And my friend was hyperventilating. When he got his breathing under control, we sat like two scared little kids in that tent. And I knew we had to get to the car to get out of there. I wanted to get out of there. But, you know, I was afraid to make the dart from the tent to the car, because I didn't want to be out in the open. I mean, all I had was a piece of canvas over my head, but that at least gave me cover. And, you know, to this day, I have a problem with walking across open spaces. As long as there's stuff around me, I'm okay. But to walk across like a big open field, I'll walk a mile and a half and go around it. But we finally mustered the courage, and I grabbed my keys and wallet. Toby did the same, and we darted to the car and got out of there and went back to the airbase. We left all of our stuff there. You know, Toby's nice cooler, the tent, and his backpack, which had his address on it. We both lived in NCO housing on base at Whiteman Air Force Base. So I think the park rangers the next day found our little campsite and called the base and said, "Yeah, I think two of your airmen have been down here doing something, and it looks like they're planning on coming back because they left all their stuff." We could care less. We just wanted to get out of there.
Yeah, I can understand that very well. That is certainly But let's now go on. At this point in time, you've done this. You just wanted to get out of there. When did this start to come together in your life and in your mind?
Not immediately. I would say at about 6 months, maybe, I started to have the dreams, and the dreams were intermittent, but they were nightmares. They were nightmares about being inside the ship. And, you know, we both suffered an injury. We both had what I would describe as the worst sunburn I ever had in my life, but I never blistered and never peeled. But it hurt. And I had flash burns to the eye, both of my eyes. That's what you get if, you know, if you're an arc welder and you don't pull that protective hood with dark glass down over your face. It's a sunburn to the cornea of your eye.
Right.
And it hurts. It makes you photophobic. So, you know what? I want to say at this point, though, that I need to say at this point that, you know, over the past 40 years, my attitude toward this whole thing has softened a great deal. Because I was very angry coming out of this, and very angry at them. But over the years, my attitude softened somewhat, and I had the feeling that, yeah, they hurt us, but it was collateral damage. I don't think it was intentional. It wasn't a torture session, you know? And my, yeah, my feelings have changed. And I also think that I should maybe focus on the bigger picture instead of just the narrow events that happened in 1977. You know, there is more to the story and more that more to consider than just the one event.
Yeah, well, there's a lot more to consider at this point. You've been through so much since then. They've come back, I believe.
They have.
Yeah. And in a big way. I mean, they've become part of your life, just like they have become part of mine and so many other people's.
And I think I'm accustomed to, I don't think, I know that I'm accustomed to that.
Me too.
I'm not afraid anymore. I actually, the entity that has contact with me, I refer to as Betty.
As Betty.
When I was a young child, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, I used to see her aboard a craft in like a playroom with other kids. And
it's
she
so
reminded
weird.
Me of a neighbor that we had who all the kids in the neighborhood, we all called her Sue. She was Japanese. She had married a GI and moved stateside. I recognized this entity. She's, you know, I called her Sue when I was a child. And then later on, when we were reintroduced in 2017, in October, third week in October 2017, I named her Betty. And this sounds ridiculous, but it's true. And the reason I named her Betty was she was wearing this ridiculous wig. And she was not a human being. She had from the facial side, looking at her head on, she looked pretty normal. But she had this big bulbous back of her head, and this wig was too small for her head and was just sitting up there kind of askew. And she had on large dark glasses, and she was dressed in just like a black cotton blouse with long, extra long sleeves and 4 long fingers sticking out. But she was sitting in my, I know this is a stretch, but I mean, this is what happened. I woke up sitting in my living room, third week in October 2017, and she is seated directly across from me. And I wake up, and I'm in that mildly sedated state. I recognize it. And I thought about yelling for my wife, and I thought, you know what, they got that covered, too. And I glanced to my left and made sure that the alarms were all set, everything was right. So she wasn't an intruder, not at least not in the normal sense of the word. You know, and my cat's, you know, on the windowsill, just stretching, not interested at all. And we communicated telepathically. And that felt normal with her. And I think it felt normal because that's the way we communicated when I was with her when I was a young child. And I really should reference back for those who don't know. In 2012, I went to the ER because I had some knee pain. And when I did, they took some x-rays, and they found a thing in my leg above my leg and a floret pattern of bone tissue sprouted in the middle of my calf muscle. And those x-rays, I believe, are on terrylovelace.com. And I want to mention that thing, that electrical-looking thing up above my knee. I started running in 1980, and I ran for the next 40 years. You know, I was a runner. I enjoyed it. I ran until 2005 when I had a heart attack. So, but what was strange is every run that I made, when I would hit the two-mile mark in my run, you know, give or take 50 yards, the spot on my knee, about the size of a half dollar, would go completely numb. I mean, I could take a pen and delineate the edges of it. And when I saw that x-ray, I realized that that lay directly underneath the spot on my leg that goes numb when I run. And that 2012 incident, and they took the x-rays in October 2012, and it was sobering to me because that reaffirmed that these things had put their hands on me.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
You do.
Oh, I yeah.
Yes, you do. And so that was difficult to process, but, you know, a long story in and of itself. So,
let me ask you this. Do they seem sort of fundamentally off kilter to you? Like the story of the ill-fitting wig, why even do that? What's the point? And yet, that I've seen that very same thing. In one of my books, I think it's in Transformation, I talk about one of them wearing a ridiculous wig. What could it be about? How could they think that that would be a good idea? Or is it some kind of sympathetic magic, wanting to look like us? It's just so strange.
I have an opinion.
Yeah,
it's just an assumption.
Wonderful. That's what I'm looking for.
As a child, these things appeared to me as little circus monkeys. Bizarre, I know. But I need to qualify that and add that in the back of Incident at Devil's Den, I left an email address and I said, look, I'm not a therapist or a doctor or anything, but if you've had a strange experience or anything similar, and you email me, I'd love to hear your story and I'll email you back. Well, and you're familiar with this routine, many times fold, but, I receive over 1400 emails to date. And I've had emails from people who claim that as children, they saw, owls and deer. And, one kid from El Paso saw a possum walking on two legs that spoke to him telepathically. I think that they appear to children in a way that the child will take as the most benign. And I think that's the purpose of the wig and the glasses and the black outfit. I mean, really the way she was dressed, I mean, unless you really looked at her, she could have walked down the streets of Dallas. Now, when she took the wig and the glasses off, it was obvious that she wasn't human. She had no ears. She had no nose, just two holes for nostrils. And, you know, she had... black eyes that kind of wrapped around, but not exaggerated. They were like a pair of wrap-around Ray-Bans. You know, I wish I knew. I've asked myself that question.
I think they're glasses, and I think it's to shield their eyes. Because I just have this memory of seeing the eyes, and the eyes were hard to deal with. Very hard to deal with. And I mean, as I'm talking, I'm remembering that. And there was something going on in those eyes, boy. It's beyond what you see with the lenses, the black lenses. I think. I'm not sure. Go ahead.
You know, I was just going to say, I have a memory of being aboard the ship. I have a few, you know. I don't have anything near a clear linear memory of everything that happened, but I have bits and pieces and flashes. But there's one event that's haunted my sleep for 40 years, And when I have the dream, I can't stop it. It's going to play out, and it always scares me. But when we were inside the ship, I was holding on my clothing, my boots, everything in my arms, and I was frozen. I mean, like Calvin Parker, I couldn't move anything except my eyes. And my eyes are darting around, and I saw lots of the little gray guys all over the place. And the interior of the ship, I don't know if they took me someplace else, but the inside of this thing looked much larger than it did from the outside. I mean, from the inside, it looked like an NFL stadium or something.
Yeah, that's commonplace to hear. In my case, it was a small inside and small outside. And Free Dreamlanders, speaking of small and large, I don't know how this segue works, but here are some commercials.
Owls are somehow connected to UFOs. I don't say that lightly. After over a decade of obsessive investigation, I am convinced of this connection. As strange as it may seem, people are seeing owls in the highly charged moments of a UFO sighting, and within the challenging memories of UFO abduction. This mystery has been the focus of my research. My name is Mike Cleland, and I have explored these connections in my book, The Messengers. At its core, this book is simply a collection of stories, and each is a remarkable real-life experience. The Messengers is also my own story of how owls played a role in my life. It's an exploration into the deeply personal questions that arose from my own contact experiences. The Messengers is the first in a trilogy of books, and each volume explores a deeper aspect of the UFO mystery. All my books are available on Amazon in paperback, ebook, and very soon as audiobooks.
In 2015, Whitley Strieber entered a whole new level of contact, and his new book, A New World, tells the powerful and revealing story of what's been happening. Read about contact experiences unlike you have ever heard described before. Learn about the breakthroughs in communication that are developing right now. Experience the wonder of seeing into a mirror universe. The thrill of discovering the close encounter experience in an entirely new way. And learn the secret of how Whitley has built a very real and ongoing relationship with our otherworldly visitors. One Amazon reviewer says, a significant document of human empowerment. Another, one mind-bending, reality-shifting read. Another, outstanding. Get A New World today, available as a paperback, a hardcover, and an ebook wherever books are sold. And as an audiobook read by Whitley on Audible.com. Unknown Country and Dreamland are unique in every way. The site offers over 16,000 news stories dating back 20 years, all of them with our uniquely open-minded and yet carefully researched point of view. You can find stories of everything from lost cities to multiple witness high strangeness events to the cutting edge of science and reality on the site. For subscribers, the site offers a wealth of material that is mind-opening and can be life-changing. Plus, there are active comment sections, both in the free area and the subscriber area, and a free weekly newsletter. Dreamland, which Whitley Strieber has been hosting for over 20 years, is archived on the site back to 2004. This archive is the only one of its kind in the world, an incredible richness of information that offers exciting adventure every time you dig in. So go to unknowncountry.com daily, get our newsletter, participate in the site's social groups, and above all, subscribe and join this unique community today. Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the Subscribe tab to see our options.
Okay, we are talking to Terry Lovelace, his website, terrylovelace.com, his books, Incident at Devil's Den, and Devil's Den, The Reckoning, a fairly incredible life, like so many other fairly incredible lives, something that's not supposed to be real, it's not supposed to happen, but that's false. It is real, it does happen, and when you're, what we're listening to today, folks, is a very accurate and exact description of what this is actually like. In fact, Terry is probably one of the best people, in the most articulate people in the world about this. So go ahead now. Let's keep on going. We were talking about Betty and Sue.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. We were talking about eyes, and I was going to relay a story about being inside the ship.
Right. So go ahead and do that.
Yeah. I was straining my eyes to the left, and there was a being there that was about 6 foot in height and wasn't gray, but he wore a gray garment, and I could see it had a V-neck. He was that close to me. And his complexion was chalkish pinkish. It was not gray. And he had, you know, long fingers, longer than they should have been. I could see four, but a thumb could have been underneath. Again, no ears, no nose, just holes, a slit for a mouth. So large black eyes that were like black gloss paint. And the second that we locked eyes, I don't know how to explain this any better than to say that he was in my head. I mean, I felt violated. I felt like he knew me, he knew my wife, he knew my secrets, he knew my plans. And I think he downloaded all my information somehow. And all I got back from him was just raw intellect. You know what it was like? It was like my English setter would come over and put her head in my lap, you know, while I'm reading or watching TV or something. And I would pet her, and she'd look up at me with the big brown eyes, and I'd look down at her. But she knew I was the alpha.
Yeah. And, they figure that out. I mean, that's how they're made, dogs. Figuring out who the alpha is critical. And, you know, when the dog decides the dog's the alpha, as happened once in my life, you're in trouble.
That's what I felt like. I felt like the dog in the equation.
Right, exactly.
Very humbling.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. So, you know, this relationship with her, it goes on to this day. Now, let me ask you this. One of the things I learned to ignore a long time ago were predictions. They make predictions, and they're always dire. And in my experience, they don't come true. I don't know if you've had that happen.
Well, in November 21st, 2020, for the second time in my adult life, Betty appeared in my study, and I was typing, and it was 3:33 a.m. because I hit 3:33 on the screen to document this and make sure I wasn't dreaming. And she told me telepathically after a kind, you know, exchange of, hi, nice to see you again. She said that, I'm here to tell you that the world is going to change. And I'm just listening, and she says, on February 2nd, the world will change. And on February 1st, the world will change. And on February 2nd, it will be, I know these words will ring true with you, a new world. And I, in November, had this anxiety about February. I thought it was a positive message at first until I slept on it. I woke up the next morning, and I was filled with anxiety about February. And in January, I found myself, now I've never been a prepper or anything like that, but I found myself buying food and bottled water, and, you know, I put some motion detector lights outside and, you know, did some things that were out of character for me.
So it wasn't a prediction exactly, it was just a statement, and it happened in November. November 21st. COVID was already around then. We just didn't know it, but I guess they did.
They did.
See, so this is the difference. When you get something like a prediction, like I got this prediction that the moon would explode, and I didn't believe it because, you know, it had never happened. But then there was another one where I saw the earth on fire.
Oh, my God.
And it is. That's happening. It's just not, yeah. It's not our thought patterns. But these aren't kind of out of the blue predictions. These are different. They're extrapolations from things that they know are true that we don't yet know. So it's not like random prophecy. And it's very important. Like they said to me in I think it was in February that or in March, after the COVID thing started. I'm not a prepper either, but I started preparing for COVID for unknown reasons in January. And so the result was that when it started, I had everything I needed in terms of masks, Lysol, and so I had so much of it. I'm still got plenty of it, and I also shared it with my children. I didn't even know why I was doing it. I didn't know why.
It was a compulsion.
It was because they had done something to me, but not consciously. It was conscious in your part, in your case. So go ahead and tell us more of the story.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, it was conscious in that she told me that the world would change, but she didn't say how. So I was left to wonder, is that mean disclosure or something? But all of this compulsion to prepare, you know, it was just, thoughts have popped into my head. I'll tell you what else is strange, but I'm very grateful. January 31st, I sold some stock that I own, and I bought Moderna, Pfizer, Abbott Labs, and I'm not a financial guy. I mean, I had some stock in Coca-Cola and General Electric, nothing really speculative. My wife was very upset with me. What are you doing? You know, have you lost your mind? Don't do that. I did it anyway, but no, I'm glad I did.
Yeah, I should say. And you had no idea why. They never helped me that way at all. If anything, they interfere when I try to make investments. My guys are no good at investments. I don't trust them at all. In any case, the other thing that happened in my case was that they said that back in March, I want to end this comment because I know I sort of left it hanging in a minute ago, that you will not see this start to come under control until December, and your world will be forever changed. And I think that it is sort of coming under control right now in a lot of the world, because unlike the United States, a lot of the world is beginning to get the vaccine out. And, you know, we're not doing so well here, of course, but then again, we never do. Maybe it'll improve. I hope the next administration is more efficient. In any case, but go ahead. So you have this experience. You see her again. What's it like to see her? Do you smell anything? Have you been touched, or you touch her?
I did not touch her. I didn't touch her in 2017. She sat with a relaxed posture. I mean, her legs were crossed, and she didn't seem threatening or hostile in any way. You know, she doesn't smile, but, you know, her facial expression is non-threatening.
I think it might be very disturbing to see one of those faces smile, personally.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Especially if there turn out to be little teeth in there, and they might be kind of sharp.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, our telepathic conversation, this is kind of interesting. You know, I did this as a child, and it was easy as a child because when you're a child, it's okay for you for your mind to be open. And I had the thought, my mind is racing, and I had the thought, what if I, even though I've found her non-threatening, the thought crossed my mind, my God, what if I think of something that upsets her, or what if I think of something inappropriate? Or, you know, and I mean, I'm sorry, I'm human, and I mean, it's like telling a group of fourth graders, don't think about elephants. And every kind of inappropriate thought flashes across my mind. And I swear to God that I embarrassed her because she told me, you know, Terry, you can keep some of your thoughts private. Just try.
Yeah, that's important to learn, by the way, folks. If you are dealing with the visitors, that you have to make a space in your head house where the door is shut. Tell us how you learn how to do this, or did they teach you? Or
Well, you know what? I learned how to do it, and I think you said it well. I kind of like bifurcate my mind, and I have a conscious side where I communicate with her, and then I have another side that's private. And you know what I do? I visualize a little room, and I shut the door.
That's exactly right. Shut the door in your head house. And yes. That's what I was told. It sounds like sort of childish because I was told how to do that when I was a child. That you have a place in you that you don't need to show anybody. And So what do I have in there? Well, the door's closed, folks. That's what I have in there.
there's a reason we haven't evolved to use telepathy.
Right, exactly, right. Because we have, you said, inappropriate thoughts, and I thought to myself, I know exactly what that means. You were thinking about her in certain ways, and,
yes.
I actually did that. I actually had sex with one of them, or with maybe the same one. I mean, who knows? Could easily be that there's only one being in managing all of us on planet Earth. She doesn't show up very often, so it could easily be just the one. We could know the same being. You realize that?
Very true.
Yeah.
I had a guy from Alabama contact me, and a very, very religious man, married and a devout Southern Baptist. And he said, I need to share this with somebody, but I can't go to anyone in our church. And we had several conversations before I convinced him, look, you can trust me. I'm not going to violate your anonymity. I mean, good lawyers know how to keep secrets. And so he told me that he was on his porch swing, sleeping. It was hot in the house. And in the middle of the night, a craft landed in his front yard, like egg-shaped. And a little gray man walked up and said, "Follow me." And he followed him. And they went inside this craft and went into a room. And there was like a double-sized exam table, like thing. And he told this little gray man, told him to remove all of his clothing. And he did without question. And they sprayed him down. He said the little man had a canister-like thing under his arm, like an aerosol spray or something, and sprayed him down with something. And then he had the experience with a female being that looked human. Although it's interesting that she looked human, but she never opened her mouth. And he said that there was not a hair on her body, like her forearms, or a mole, or a freckle, or anything. And he found that strange.
Oh, why would he find that strange? Listen, free Dreamlanders, I've got some very bad news for you because this is so fascinating. I'm so sorry to tell you this. We have to go and leave you behind. And please go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe. There's no place like it in the world. And frankly, like everybody during COVID, we've lost a few subscribers and we don't cut them off if they can't afford to pay. We just keep them going on for free. So if you can afford it, go to unknowncountry.com and sign up. It's $4.95 a month or $39.50 a year. And there are other ways of, so you can even make me deliriously happy by getting a lifetime membership for $350, which a few people have done. And I'm so incredibly grateful for that. In any case, do it. And also go to terrylovelace.com. If you engage with this, whether you've had a visitor experience or not, if you really engage with this material, it helps all of us because there is a sort of mind field, as it were. And as this gradually gets more and more focused and we become more and more able to handle this, this process of contact, because that's what it is going to get clearer and clearer and more useful. Because after all, when you think of what Terry was told back in November, if the whole world had been told that and we had understood it better, this would be a different world. That's how big this actually is. Anyway, free Dreamlanders, I love you. Goodbye. We'll talk again next week. We're going on down the road, subscribers. We're not even going to take a breath.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.